This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. Gulfstream Park, champions start here. And again, appreciate their sponsorship, some of the promos and events here. And one of the promos they help us out with is use our bankrolls, and we have a live bankroll today at Uncle Sam Lane's. Swing on by, sign up for the team, put your name in the hat between noon and 2. I'll be playing starting about 1 or so, at the end of the day, team splits up the winnings, so hopefully I can knock it out of the park. That all happens this afternoon at Uncle Sam Lane's in Troy. Swing by if you get a chance at the Clubhouse Racebook Sunday, tomorrow. Double promotion, trifecta challenge, and a match bet tomorrow here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Stop by here as well. And I said yesterday, what else are you going to do? You can't be watching the NCAA or whatnot. So stop by here and watch some racing. Or if you're more comfortable from home, that's an option too. Turn on the network and watch via OTB TV and bet via Capital OTB Bet. But horse racing is pretty much the only thing on the agenda. And before I went on the air today, Dan from the control room came in and gave me a list of many tracks now are racing without fans. And, you know, today, Aqueduct, Tampa, Oaklawn, Gulfstream, no fans. Southern California, Santa Anita, no fans. Golden Gate, no fans. Laurel, no fans. So tracks are still going with no fans. Some tracks, though, are canceling, suspending racing for the time being, many of them for an indefinite period. Decisions haven't been made, but I was handed the list. Parks, Mahoning, Fairmount, Miami Valley, Northfield, Yonkers, Meadowlands, Rialto, Pocono, Monticello, Freehold, some of the tracks that, again, are on a break, as it were. I was saying to the guys in the control room, I went into the supermarket last night and wanted to get some ground beef for a hamburger. Gone. No beef. It is a very strange situation. I said the last couple of days, I am no expert. I think it's going to break sooner rather than later. That's my feel. Just looking what's happening in China, which is leveled off already. It seems like we're about 3 weeks behind. But again, I'm no expert. There are far more dire predictions. That's my feeling on the situation. So we'll see how it works out, though. But as I say, racing in most jurisdictions that we follow still continuing, but with no fans on the grounds. All right, on Racing Across America this morning, a little bit later on, speaking of racing, Oaklawn has a nice day today with the Rebel and a couple other stakes. And towards the end of the program, we will be joined by Nancy Holthus from Oaklawn Park to talk about that. She'll be live. We taped a couple interviews yesterday. A little bit later on, Sean Smealy, the executive director of the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. They are pushing the legislation to get USADA to be the national overseer of drug testing in the country. And with what happened earlier this week with the indictments, that is bubbling up again. And speaking of that, we'll start things out with Matt Hagerty from the Daily Racing Forum. Matt covers the industry issues, and he, of course, had coverage of the indictments earlier this week. Certainly wanted to touch on that this morning. So we talked with Matt again yesterday, talked about the indictments, also talked a little bit about how coronavirus is affecting things. And he had a nice article on Handle, which I thought was good news, worth talking. So at the end of the interview, we touch on that as well. So up next, Matt Hagerty, Daily Racing Forum. trying to find a title for you, Matt. I think you're more the, I want to say, kind of the hard news guy for the coverage in the Daily Racing Form. Is that fair? What is your official title?
Yeah, you know, I think I used to go by industry reporter, which kind of covers most of the stuff on my beat. So I'm comfortable with that.
And it was funny, we did the handicappers report a little earlier with my colleague Brian Addo, and he started off the show, and we tape it every Friday, every week, and he said, "Well, since I talked to you last week, been kind of a quiet week, huh, Seth?"
Yeah, it has been between coronavirus and the indictments, it has been a very busy week.
So. It's been nuts, and I want to hit on both of those, but let's start with the indictment story, which came out earlier this week. Obviously, all kinds of implications and ripples in the horse racing industry. But just give folks, for folks who haven't been plugged in completely during the week, give us a little overview, because this was a doping case, so to speak, but it wasn't really based on positive tests. It was a little more complex than that. So just give us the overview of the indictments.
Yeah, I think the best way to look at this, and I've said this on a few other shows throughout the week, is to look at this as kind of a drug sting that would go from manufacturer all the way to user. The 27 people so far that have been indicted, at least in the first round of unsealed indictments on Monday, represented people that were not only administering these substances, but who were involved in the manufacture, the procurement, and the distribution of these substances. So you're looking at an investigation that we know at least started looking at thoroughbred people 2 years ago, and that had been looking at people in the standardbred world for quite some time, going back perhaps even to 2016. It looks like that they were following these substances and putting these chains together as far as where they originated and then where they ended up. They obviously had wiretap approval going back to last year. There are intercepted phone conversations with people involved in the distribution supply chain, I guess you would call it. And so you're looking at a pretty comprehensive takedown, if the charges are true, of this entire chain that goes back to manufactured compounds and then finally to the horses themselves.
Yeah, and we should make that clear. Obviously, these are allegations at this point. This is alleged innocent until proven guilty, et cetera, et cetera. But certainly some of the intercepted phone conversations that appeared in the indictments were not flattering, to say the least, to some of the folks. And break it down a little bit. Obviously, the big names that attracted all the attention, Jason Service, trainer of Maximum Security, George Navarro, one of the high percentage guys down in Florida and at Monmouth in New Jersey. But on the trainer side, it was those two and a couple of standardbred trainers, I believe, and then some vets on the track. But as you say, there were also non-racetrack people. I mean, people obviously involved on the periphery in the industry, but folks who are in these firms that are making some of these substances that were subsequently used. So it was a breakdown of trainers, some racetrack people, and some people off the racetrack.
Yeah, and, you know, there's still some mystery surrounding this. I know people don't want to hear this, but the substances they're talking about are procured from what you would call compounding pharmacies or internet pharmacies, and they're kind of the equivalent of, say, the GNC of the human world. They produce supplements. None of it is regulated by the FDA. In the past, a lot of these substances have been tested and not been found out to not include a lot of the ingredients that they say are included in it. They make wild claims about what they can do. But at the same time, the conversations that were intercepted definitely reveals that the people who were using these, including George Navarro and Jason Service, believed that they were having a dramatic impact on their horses, and their statistics seemed to back up that they had some sort of advantage over other people. So one of the specific things they're talking about, which is SPF 1000, it's not clear whether or not the one that's available publicly is the same substance that they were using. So I think there's a lot of questions about, you know, what exactly was going into these horses, how long it takes for whatever these substances were to clear. And we've seen some news on that yesterday with the Strona group saying that they're going to enforce a mandatory stand down of 60 days on any of the horses that were in these barns. So there's still a lot of questions to be answered. And one of the things I think all people need to keep in mind as this goes forward is that right now, these people that are involved here are facing one or two counts of a charge of misbranding conspiracy. This is not something you see crop up often. There are none of the charges that might surround, you know, harm to a racehorse or any kind of interstate commerce fraud because people were betting on these. I don't think that these are the charges that are finally going to be adjudicated. I think there's more coming. I think there's more people. I think that they moved on this indictment for certain reasons, and they'll be spending the next month looking to gather more information, charge more people, and add more charges to this indictment.
Well, that goes to one of the things I was confused about, and it seems like maybe from reading the indictments, it wasn't clear. But I had linked on Equidaily to an article this week coming out of an Australian newspaper that referenced the indictments and said that SGF 1000 was tested a couple of years ago in Australia, and they didn't find anything untoward. But it may be the case that what is labeled as SGF 1000 wasn't necessarily the same compound they were looking at in Australia.
Exactly. No one knows what's in these formulations. Now, the thoroughbred industry here in the United States has looked at this specific thing. I believe going back to 2014, I had written about it actually on Monday when the indictments came out, and found that there was really nothing in there to be that concerned about. Now, you also get into other things in which you would have interactions with other substances. Although it says that service, the only thing in the indictment, named substance in the indictment for service is SGF-1000, obviously George Navarro refers to a panoply of different things that have silly, stupid nicknames, and we don't know what those are. Now, they are purported in the indictment to be blood doping agents, pain blockers, but that's precisely the language that a lot of these pharmacies use, even though some of their products don't contain what they say they do. The ITTP drug, which is very expensive to manufacture, has been advertised through a lot of these products on the internet pharmacies, and anytime somebody tests one, they don't find the actual ITTP. Now, there's also the case that there's a second channel. There's one channel in which guys are just getting these things that are basically junk and snake oil, but there's a second channel in which they're laced with other things and then used in interaction with other substances to get the effect you're looking for. So this is a really complex environment here.
Yeah, and certainly, as you said, the phone conversations that were quoted, the indictments, you know, between Jason Service and George Navarro in particular, indicated they certainly think that there's something going on here with these substances, and they are doing what they claim to do. But again, we don't know exactly what was in them necessarily. But as you say, that this investigation goes back a couple of years. If you follow the phone conversations, they go back quite a while, phone conversations and text going back and forth and whatnot. Do we have an idea at this point what sparked the investigation?
You know, it does seem like just from reading, you know, the indictment and trying to put a timeline together, that it was probably some sort of look at harness racing, standardbred racing, and then following the supply chain from there into thoroughbred racing. Now, that's just my opinion, but it seems like when constructing the timeline, that's where I'm landing. I have not been able to get additional comment from the district attorney's office about how the investigation went forward. I don't anticipate getting that. Most of these people are going to be arraigned on March 23rd. That's going to be a simple guilty or not guilty plea. So I think there's still a lot more information that needs to come out to get clarity on exactly how this unfolded. But we do, you know, we know for certain they had enough to go to a judge last year at the very latest and say we need to wiretap cell phones, which oftentimes you're going to need at least some evidence to go into the judge's quarters to get that authorization.
And do we know, will there potentially be more indictments, or are there likely more indictments?
The sources that I've talked to this week believe that there are definitely going to be more indictments. The feds are almost certainly going to be looking for some of these people to strike plea bargains. They're still following the supply chain. After these arrests were made, they're certainly going to be subpoenaing documents from some of these internet pharmacies. They have everyone's cell phones, so people that they didn't, that they weren't tapping, they now have access to those. I don't know whether or not they can get into them. But there's certainly more evidence that they're collecting, more evidence that they're analyzing, and the expectation of most people who have been involved in cases like this is that there will certainly be more people involved.
And I didn't know that about the cell phones, but give us, as far as your knowledge and information, how did this actually play out on Monday when the indictments were actually served?
What do you mean as far as play out?
As far as gathering that evidence and showing up at Barnes and whatnot.
Yeah, in any case like this, when you have multiple barns being raided or multiple facilities or, you know, anything that law enforcement does, plus serving these arrest warrants, they all happen at the exact same time to avoid anyone getting tipped off from anyone else involved in the indictment. So everyone we've talked to said that the arrests and the barn searches started precisely at 4 a.m. on Monday morning. When they were arrested, the cell phones were confiscated. Most of the people were processed by the end of the day, but that has complicated efforts to try to talk to these guys or the lawyers. They do have calls out to several of the lawyers representing people involved in the indictment, have not been able to talk to them yet, with the exception of one person. So it's still, you know, we're still just in the early stages here, and like I said, I think there's just so much more that's going to come out.
And next up will be the arraignments. Is that the game plan?
Yeah, March 23rd. Some of the guys on the kind of manufacturing side, I think they're up next week, actually. I'm not sure why it's split like that, but the thoroughbred people under the largest indictment, the one that most people read, those are all March 23rd.
And as far as the horses, you've kind of already alluded to it with the Stronach group, but how's that going to play out? And is the Stronach group going to be alone in that situation of standing down the horse? It seems like all the racetracks will probably follow suit, you would think. But update us again on what the Stronach group game plan is going to be.
Yeah, there's actually an official process for this. And I did talk with Dr. Deion Benson, who's the chief veterinary officer, yesterday about their plan. Now, under the official veterinarian's list, if one track puts a horse on an official veterinarian's list, then all other tracks will recognize that horse is on the veterinarian's list. The Stronach group can only capture those horses that were trained by any of the people that were indicted if they are stabled on the grounds of one of their racetracks or if the horse's last start was made at one of their racetracks. So they have made the effort to capture all of those horses that fit that criteria. They've also put the designation on any horse who was claimed out of its last start by one of the trainers who were indicted, and I think you will almost certainly see an industry-wide effort over the next week to were stabled. They have actually a regulation on the books requiring a stand down on horses that were administered any kind of SPF 1000, SGF, I'm sorry. I think you'll see, I don't think you'll see these horses starting for a while. And, you know, obviously the biggest name out there is Maximum Security. I don't know if he's out of quarantine in Chicago yet, but he is being sent to California. So he will definitely be be under that 60-day stand down.
And we lost you for just a minute there, Matt. So I think we missed, it is 60 days that is going to be the kind of the standard for horses to sit on the sidewalk.
Yeah, minimum of 60. If the horses don't test clean, then that will be extended.
And it is, you know, they're going to test, but like this SGF 1000, is there a test for that?
Right. I mean, that's kind of the, I don't know if it's catch 22, but that's kind of one of the problems. One of the things in the indictment said that maximum security specifically, they pulled in out of competition test. The New Jersey Racing Commission pulled in out of competition test on this horse on or about June 5th. The test did not show anything. At the same time, the indictment claims that SDF 1000 was given to this horse, or at least someone was heard saying that the horse would be given this substance on or about the same time, prior to the sample being taken from the horse. And as we know, that sample came up clean. So you're looking at this dilemma again. Did it test clean because they were using, you know, a substance that didn't have anything that really you cared about finding, or that it was something that you couldn't detect with existing tests? So it's still unclear, you know, what is in that substance that the indictment talks about. But obviously, since there was an out-of-competition test that came back clean, if that was given to them, then the test didn't find anything, although it's possible the substance didn't have anything in it to find. Can we follow that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that all plays out. And again, it will be playing out with the arraignments next and whatnot and going forward. We'll keep up with your coverage in the Daily Racing Forum. Wanted to hit on
that. Yeah, let me just cut in 1 second, because I want to make sure that people out there don't think that I'm saying that these horses were not given something to enhance their performance. We all know what the percentages were. You know, we all know how much higher they are than the rest of the world. I'm not saying that they weren't given performance-enhancing substances. There are just questions about what they were. So that's it.
Yeah, no, and I'm right with you, and I think that's part of some of the confusion of how the indictments came out. As I say, I had the Australian article that said, oh, it's been tested, and it was kind of okay. And as you said, there was some American tests as well. But we don't know if that's what was in the bottle that was labeled such. And,
right.
and it just may not be something that the tests reveal at this point.
Right.
So that's all part of the problem, certainly.
Yeah.
Want to hit on a couple other topics as well, and you touched on it at the top a little bit. Coronavirus. I was in here on Thursday doing the handicapping show in the afternoon and kind of started the show out saying, well, the NBA is kind of canceled, and we'll see how it affects other sports and horse racing. And 4 hours later, I was saying the NCAA tournament is off, spring training is being postponed, horse racing is advanced from a number of tracks around the country. In 4 hours, it's completely off the rails. Let's talk a little bit about yesterday, how this changed on the horse racing world.
Yeah, I think you're getting a response of the there shouldn't be people mingling in big crowds. Horse racing and golf are a little different. You know, obviously, horse racing does have indoor places. But basically, you have every major track right now saying that they are not going to allow spectators, at least for the foreseeable future. Tampa Bay Downs joined just before we got on the air here. But they're not going to, they're only canceling after their Sunday card. The surprising one, I think, is Keeneland. It is still 3 weeks before the start of their meet. It is immensely popular here, not just in central Kentucky, but you're talking about people that come from neighboring states to go to the meet. They will not be allowing spectators April 2nd through April 11th. They're off on April 12th, which is Easter, and then they will reevaluate for when they start racing again on the 15th. It's still 3 weeks away. We don't know exactly, you know, what's next for the coronavirus, but obviously Keeneland has a very strong reputation here in central Kentucky. They don't want to be seen as doing something that that is out of whack with the rest of the world, and so I think they're being abundantly cautious. And as a resident of Lexington, I'm I'm a little disappointed that they've been at abundantly cautious. So I would have rather seen them make the decision a little closer to race time.
Well, there are some tracks, and Keeneland would be one of them. Keeneland, Del Mar, Saratoga, and Oaklawn, which hasn't made the decision yet. I think crowd size for them plays into a lot of their, you know, their revenue, frankly. And so I think it wouldn't surprise me if those kind of tracks were a little more cautious before making the decision. So it was kind of surprising that Keeneland jumped in when they did. But again, they haven't made the decision for the whole meet.
Right. Well, Oaklawn did announce late last night, that they will not have spectators this weekend.
Ah, so, okay, I didn't see that.
So, yeah, they joined in last night. You know, and let's, you know, look at New York and California. They were in different situations. They had, you know, in one case in New York, Governor Cuomo said, you know, no large gatherings of more than 500 people. Of course, the jokes came about, well, that doesn't affect Aqueduct. But then also in California, you had the governor, you know, at least strongly recommending that, that people avoid crowds of, I think, 250 or more. So they were kind of, they were kind of forced into their decisions. But then you just saw the enormous rapidity, I guess enormous rapidity is not, but you saw the rapidity in which the entire sporting universe just fell in line. You know, I think the Players Championship, they canceled, only because they looked like an outlier. Will this affect Thoroughbred racing in the next couple weeks? They are still putting their events on. They're just not allowing spectators in. Maybe we may see cancellation of actual races coming up. But so far, no one's canceled races. They just said spectators can't come in.
Yeah, and we talked about on the Handicappers Report earlier, maybe it'll be a bonus with sports betting having taken hold and now really nothing to go play except for the races, and people can certainly play from home, and so it'll be interesting to see. And that ties into the one last thing I wanted to talk to you about. We'll leave with some good news. The article you had about the handle up in the first 2 months of the year, where you kind of did a deep dive on the numbers of handle in the United States over January and February, I was kind of shocked, because you throw in what's happened out in California and the weather situation, which canceled a lot of turf racing down at the fairgrounds this winter. To see handle up over the first 2 months, I think is good news for the industry.
Yeah, I have, I frequently just ask one of our data guys just to run me some numbers, and a lot of times I don't get anything newsworthy out of it. You know, we made a decision to look at handle shifts over the first 2 months of the year, and you know, I'm not going to say shocked, but I was surprised. Surprised enough that we decided we were going to make a story out of it, obviously. You looked at Santa Anita and the declines they've had there, and it wasn't just that the money was shifting, it's that there was actually organic growth in the United States over the first 2 months. Now, there was favorable weather compared to last year, so probably not as many things on turf. But you saw the shifts go to places where the field sizes were high. And it was certainly unusual to see that the numbers had gone up organically over the first 2 months, and that money was shifting around the landscape.
Yeah, very interesting. And again, folks can catch that article as well, drf.com. You can catch all of Matt's work there, hard copy of the DRF or drf.com, again, covering industry news. Matt, we appreciate the thoughts this morning, the indictments, coronavirus, the handle, and much, much more. We will talk again in the future.
Thanks for having me on, and stay healthy.
Everybody's going to try a little social distancing. Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum, thanks for the visit. All right, thanks to Matt. And again, the coronavirus, a fast-moving thing. Some tracks have suspended racing. Most of the tracks, as I say, that we watch are racing without spectators at this point. I mentioned Northfield at the top. They will be racing, but without spectators on the harness side of things tonight. So again, just updating that we talked about at the top of the show. Again, with those indictments coming out earlier in the week, it has bubbled up again. The Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity, they're pushing that Integrity Act in Congress to make USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, the drug testing agency federally for racing. A lot of big names in racing have kind of jumped on board over the past year, certainly over the past 6 months. And this week, some of those voices have been heard from again. I thought it was a good time to reach out to Sean Smealy. We talked to him last summer up at Saratoga. He is the executive director of the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. So up next, Sean Smealy.
Good morning. How are you, Seth?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. We talked to you this summer a little bit about the Coalition, and I thought in light of the news this week, the Coalition is bubbling up again, so I thought we'd bring you back on board. Before we do that, I want to remind people, as I say, I've known Sean my whole life, and he's a Washington guy. As an adult, he has been very heavily involved in the federal government down in Washington, so great experience there. But a lifelong horse racing fan. I know your family is at a box up at Saratoga. I see you up there every summer. And I'm not sure I will ask you. I know you've been involved in West Point horses. And
yep.
I know you were in the winner's circle last summer for at least one photo. Was it one or two? Because West Point had a good summer last year.
Yeah, no, I actually got in for two, which was great. Originator was one of the horses. I think you might have been the one you're talking about. But, yeah, we had a great summer, which means I'm probably going to have a couple lousy summers ahead of me, but I'll take it.
No. You're on a roll now. But again, it's great for horse racing that you have the experience and knowledge you have of Washington, the workings there. But you're a horse racing guy as well. And again, we had you on this summer talking about the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. For folks who didn't see that or may have forgotten, again, just give us the mandate for the Coalition.
Sure. So the Coalition is, I would say, about 15 to 16 different organizations that have come together to put a bill that would basically mandate that the anti-doping rules of all the 38 racing jurisdictions be under one sort of unified operation that would be completely independent of anybody that has a monetary interest in racing.
And I heard you were on with our friend Steve Bick on the radio this week, and I heard some of that conversation. And you mentioned, gee, no organization really goes to Washington and says, regulate us.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be kind of how horse racing would be playing that. So how do you answer the horse racing community who is maybe a little leery of government regulation?
Well, I mean, again, it's the way I said to Steve was, no one does go to and say is regularly unless it's a, you know, very desperate situation. And I think we've seen now the industry take two significant body blows over the past year. And, you know, the forces that want to get rid of racing are starting to gain a lot of steam. I think one of the smartest things we did was to reach out to the animal welfare organizations when putting this coalition together. Not the crazy ones, but the ones that are looking to improve racing, not eliminate them. And they were very instrumental in helping us draft this legislation. And I would say that, for those who are worried about that, you know, racing itself has had, a couple bailouts in the past. And one of them is the Interstate Horse Racing Act, which, you know, now 90% of all wagers are interstate. Half of all horses run at least one time in their career over a state line. So this is a very national sport. So, you can't say that the federal government doesn't have a say in it. And when an industry performs badly, in this case, an increase in horse, fatalities and obviously, a major cheating going on, then this is what kind of happens. But at least with our bill, it's a bill that was drafted by most everybody in the industry. So instead of being imposed upon us by some, enterprising congressman, this is a bill that was put together by industry. It took us about 8 months to get this bill together. So it's a very well thought out bill.
and it's not going to be run by the government. The Horse Racing Anti-Doping Agency is going to be a, you know, private nonprofit. It'll be funded by the industry, but it's just being mandated by the federal government.
And again, listening to the radio show this week, Steve brought up the point that I think a lot of people would relate to the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity and the legislation you're pushing, which would bring USADA in as the drug testing agency. And so there would be kind of a federal organization overseeing that testing, which would give it more power, maybe a little more money, and more importantly, again, what you talked about, Steve, with more deterrence. And for folks who look at those indictments from earlier this week, it wasn't positive tests. So the question is, well, then how does USADA play into this, and what would they have had to do with a situation like this? But you made the great point and pointed to USADA and how they have changed the human side of the game, the Olympics and whatnot, with deterrence, and how that would play out in the horse racing game as well. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, 180 degrees. In 2000, U.S. were considered the biggest cheaters in the Olympic, in the Olympic Games. And it was, you know, track and field and swimming and you name it. They were, they were doping like crazy. And the problem was, is that the sports federations were in charge of the anti-doping program. And so they had a major conflict of interest. If one of their big stars or their moneymakers tested positive, what were they going to do? And of course, you know, they went with they followed their wallets and did the wrong thing half the time. And that's why we were considered the biggest cheaters. The USRC got together and said, you know, we can't do this anymore. And that's why, with the help of, again, federal legislation and federal funding, they created this, again, private nonprofit organization that was given total control over the doping, just the doping, of the Olympic athletes. And as a result, within a few short years, they became the gold standard of the world. And it was simply because of this independence. And I think you raised a great point about deterrence. And I think I said this on your show last summer, if a trainer knows what he's going to be tested, which is 98% of the time after the race, he knows what he's going to be tested for. As you saw in those indictments, the veterinarians were kept saying, oh, there's no test for this. There's no test for that drug. You have nothing to worry about, right? So if you know what you're going to be tested for, and you know that some of the labs that the tests are going to go to are, you know, up to snuff, then you're incentivized to cheat. Well, under the USADA system, where it's, you know, for human athletes, which is 60% is out of competition, 60%. So you have no idea when you're going to be tested. So you may have a horse that you're giving steroids to or some important drug that will still have an impact by race day, but there will be no more, you know, you won't be able to tell by any testing. You're not going to have that luxury, right? And as I said to Steve, too, the other great thing that USADA does, they keep these samples for 9 years. So if there's a, you know, all of a sudden they find out there's a drug that people have been using, you can go back and test these samples, and they've done this in the Olympics, and go back and grab those gold medals, you know, and say, you know, you know, retroactively, we've caught you cheating. Now, the way the bill's set up, you can't do that. You can't do that now. He can't take samples that are there now. So we couldn't go back to, you know, the Kentucky Derby from, you know, 2015 and test those samples. But going forward, they would have that ability. So those are two major deterrents. And also, you know, the USADA's got, you know, great relationships with the federal government, DOJ and the FBI. And they'll have good relationships with all the state investigation agencies. So, you know, their job will be to try to root out doping, whereas state regulatory agencies, they have a number of missions. You know, obviously, first and foremost is the gambling side of it, right? And I always felt that doping's been the redheaded stepchild the whole time. And so it just changes the whole culture. You know, right now it's a culture of drugs. There's an overuse of drugs, even therapeutic drugs right now. I'm sure you saw Mark Cassie's article about glenbuterol, right? So, I mean, there's just a culture of drugs in there, and That's going to change under this, and that can only help the sport, and it's certainly going to help the equine athlete.
Yeah, and I think those are two important things for folks who aren't familiar. The out-of-competition testing, I think, is very important, and holding on for 9 years in two ways. For folks who aren't familiar, blood doping, a lot of that is a built-up kind of a thing where they give something to a horse out of competition way before the race, and it changes the kind of the chemistry, or for lack of a better word, of their blood. And then they can stop before the race in time, but they're still getting the benefits of what had happened. And so out of competition testing, I think, is very important. And then for those kind of things that we don't have tests for yet, if you're holding for that 9 years, eventually that word gets out there's something going around, and that can be added to the testing regimen. So the holding on to the samples and having the ability to test later, I totally agree. I think those are both very big deterrents.
And let me tell you one other thing that USADA does, which I think they'll be able to apply to the equine athlete, is they have a call thing, a biological passport. And so for every athlete, they monitor, their levels and a lot of different things. If they see a spike in something, even though there's no drug test accounting for it, that sends them a signal that they got to start looking for other things, right? And that's what can, and so they've been able to catch a number of human athletes cheating, because even if they said, well, I got this new drug, they can't detect, they can go in and say, well, these certain, vital signs or whatever are spiking here or there. That's a signal to them that there's something else there, and it allows them to go back and test even further. So, again, all towards deterrence. The horrible thing about not having enough deterrence is that if you have a clean trainer and he's constantly getting beat by a dirty trainer, eventually they're going to go dirty because they have to make a living too. And you saw it in baseball, right? All these big guys were knocking home runs out of the park, and they're all built up using steroids. And all these minor leaguers are saying, I can't break in. I better start doing the steroid thing too. So it's this insidious way to, that happens in sports just to keep up. It's the win at all cost culture. And so by bringing this operation in and giving some confidence to everybody in the sport that it's a level playing field, I think you get more owners in. You'll get more wagers back. It would be 100% healthy for the industry.
Yeah. Again, you're a partner in some of the West Point horses, and Terry Finley came out and I think said what a lot of owners have said. It's just discouraging to look and think, oh, we were getting beaten by these guys. We're running second and third. And so we had the opportunity to maybe have the first place purse or the second place purse. And for stables that are out there kind of fighting all year long, that makes a big difference when you're going up against guys like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's what folks are kind of looking at as I will ask you, since we talked this past summer, you've had a lot more support jump on board as well.
Yes, in fact, we had a it was sad that it required, the events of Monday and the Department of Justice announcement, but we got some, really impressive names joining us on. One just announced today was Bob Baffert, probably the one of the few names recognized outside of the sport, who wrote an op-ed, and I'll send it to you, haven't seen it, in the Washington Post this morning, announcing his favor of, in favor of the Horse Racing Integrity Act. But in addition, Chad Brown, Dale Romans, Dwayne Lucas, Dallas Stewart, Neil Howard, a bunch of others. And, in November, there was a letter that 50-plus, that Todd Pletcher put together, 50-plus trainers signed on to. So, I look at that and still wonder to myself, how can HBPA, and Dale Romans to me is the face of the HBPA, how can they still oppose this bill when pretty much the cream of their crop has come out in favor of it? So I think you're seeing a trend towards people realizing that the states can't do it on their own. They neither, they don't have the tools nor the will to really do it the right way. It's probably just better for the industry to put it into an independent organization that will have people from the industry on the board, that will, you know, do it the right way and give people the confidence that they're playing at a level playing field.
We talked a little bit before we went on the air earlier this week. A Senate committee passed a bill that involves some of that USADA and the horse racing side of things. Give us a little update on where we are in the process, and also talk a little bit about how USADA, who is obviously aimed at the human side, how they will transition over to the equine side.
Excuse me. Sorry, I got still getting over a little cold here. So the great news is that we just hit 250 co-sponsors in the House. We're hoping to have a markup sometime late spring. The coronavirus thing may push that back a little bit because I'm not sure when the Congress is going to come back after they pass this bill. But if we get to 290 co-sponsors, which after Monday's events I think is definitely within our sights, we don't even have to have a markup. We can go right to the House floor and pass it there. We've been working with Senator McConnell's office on, you know, trying to see what we can do to get the bill passed in the Senate. And so I'm very optimistic that we're going to have a bill by the end of all this. You know, it's the march of legislation could be very, you know, never really by a straight line, but I've never seen so much enthusiasm for it before in the fact that we're getting so much support from the industry now, from a lot of different quarters, makes me very optimistic that we'll have, you know, a success on this. With respect to USADA managing it, so USADA, I think, will make the transition very easily. Number one, the board is going to be made up of people, you know, non-conflicted people from the industry who have expertise in various parts of the industry, will be part and very active parts of the board that will manage HADA. The executive director will have, obviously, a lot of equine experience. And the key thing that USADA brings to the table, and I mentioned this to Steve, is they're going to put the operation together. They know how to put a great anti-doping program together. You know, the insistence on out-of-competition testing, the accredited labs, you know, the investigation, the commitment, you know, frankly, the commitment alone is going to be a huge culture change. So I think that's where they're going to come in. I always, as I told them, that Ray, I said, you know, when you get a, you know, a CFO in your corporation, you don't really care that he knows how to make widgets. You really want to know that he knows his accounting, and that's going to be pretty much the role of USADA, and that's how it will apply. I think you'll see USADA working with the state, the current state agencies that are working with that. The people that are taking the test will likely answer to this new organization, the Horse Racing Anti-Doping Authority, and that stuff will, you know, how it all works state by state will be worked out. Each state will be responsible for the costs. So if a state that's very active in anti-doping, their delta for the additional cost of this will be a lot smaller than states that we all know that do nothing in this area. They're going to have a higher cost. So we thought that was the most fair thing to do. There's a lot of things that, you know, the enactment doesn't take place, you know, a year after the bill is passed into law to give a, you know, a year kind of long runway to how this all will be implemented.
Again, when we talked in the summer, it was a hot topic already then because of where the horse racing industry was last year. Certainly over the last week, it has become much more of a hot topic. And as we've said, since we had you on last summer, a lot of folks in the horse racing industry recognizing the situation have hopped on board. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. I will also tell people, if you'd like to know more about the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity and the bill, you can go to horseracingintegrity.com. There's also a link that gives a list of legislators, so if folks want to contact their legislator. But there's also a petition on there, so I guess folks can still go on and sign the petition, correct?
Yes, please do, too. It makes a big difference.
So again, we have the address on the screen right now, horseracingintegrity.com. Check it out. Sean, as always, appreciate the visit. Good luck going forward with not only the legislation and the mandate there, but good luck with the horses as well.
All right, Seth, thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Sean Seeley, Executive Director, Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity.
All right, thank you.
And again, with the events of earlier this week, that I just thought we'd touch base with Sean. Again, Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity, which has bubbled up again. The legislation, as I mentioned with Sean, had some action in the Senate this week, in fact. So we'll see how that plays out. Certainly with the events in horse racing in general over the past year and 6 months or so, a lot of prominent names have jumped on board. The aforementioned, I mentioned Terry Finley, and we talked in the interview with Bob Baffert and Todd Pletcher and Graham Mosen. Certainly a lot of prominent names have kind of jumped on board. We'll see what happens as far as that. And the indictments overall, for folks who maybe tune in on the weekend and you're working during the week and you weren't able to keep up with things, if you go over to the Equidaily page, I link to a lot of the coverage of this week from the indictments and commentaries and whatnot as well, so you can check that out. So the first couple of segments of the show, we covered racing news because there was plenty of it this week, certainly. But let's cover racing itself. Joined now live on the phone by our friend Nancy Holthus, the paddock commentator from Oaklawn. A big day at Oaklawn today, highlighted by the Rebel. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm happy to bring in some good news.
Exactly, because it was some week all over.
Yes, it was.
We talked a little. We had Matt Haggerty on at the top of the show talking racing news, and obviously the indictments were the big topic. But we also hit on Corona, and we hit on your track a little bit. And I feel for you guys, because I've mentioned this on the show when we've talked to you before. I've been to Oaklawn, and for folks up in our neighborhood, we can easily relate because it's very Saratoga-like, just the track and the fans and the city that gets so involved. And so I feel for you guys that now you've kind of joined, understandably, a lot of other tracks around. And this weekend, you'll be racing without fans.
Yeah, and on one of our biggest weekends of the race meet, I went home last night and my husband, Paul, said, I made history at Oaklawn yesterday. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I won the first race at Oaklawn without fans. I said, yes, you did, because he won the first race yesterday. But I said, you made history for the wrong reason, buddy. But, you know, the show must go on, as they say. So, interestingly enough, our handle was up yesterday as opposed to the year before. So, you know, people are at home and still at their ADWs in the casinos, and our sports book was standing room only yesterday. So people are still coming out to the casino, to the sports book, and a lot of people still didn't cancel their travel plans. They're still in Hot Springs and still celebrating Rebel, just not in our grandstand.
Yeah, I'm sure. What was the feel like without fans yesterday?
I'm not going to lie, Seth, it was kind of creepy.
Yeah, I can understand.
It kind of felt like when Vic and I were doing our pre-race show, it felt like, you know, we have a lot of rehearsals leading up to opening day. It kind of felt like one of our dress rehearsals, you know, going through a full pre-race show that we call Oaklawn Today. But, you know, having horses in the paddock with, you know, and doing my Oaklawn paddock pre-race show, it you know, with all of the connections and talking to no fans and, you know, interacting with fans, which is my favorite part of my job, is interacting with the fans. And, you know, when I go back and forth to my office, it was it kind of took a little joy out of the job. But you know what? We're still here for the love of the game. So we still have to go on with the day.
Yeah, as I say, we can relate and kind of feel for you, because Saratoga, I can't imagine a day at Saratoga without the fans, and so I'm sure it's very, very different down there. But as you kind of alluded to, and I've said it the past couple of days here, I'm in here on Capital OTB TV doing the handicapping show 5 days a week, because a lot of people are at home watching on television and playing with their computer, and so now without any other sports to plug into, that may attract us a little more attention on the horse racing side. And certainly a lot of people are already in the mindset of being at home and watching and playing. So hopefully that'll play out, and that handle boost maybe will continue. Maybe there'll be a little bit of a silver lining. At least we'll keep our fingers crossed that way. But you certainly have a great card to bet into today. Let's take a look at the card, and we'll start with the highlight, the Rebel. I will mention a little earlier on the card, as is often the case on these big three-year-old days, boy, you have a great maiden race in the fifth race. Joe Sharp says, yeah, I'll take a Blackberry Wine up to Oaklawn and vie for the 87,000 in the fifth race.
Yeah, you know, I've got an opinion about this, and I have a hard time biting my tongue when it does come to Blackberry Wine, you know, because of the fact that this horse has been disqualified twice. You know, was DQ'd from a maiden win at Churchill Downs, but still went on, or won a maiden at Churchill, went on to compete against first-level allowance runners, won that race, and then was DQ'd again. So I've got an opinion about this horse. So has won twice at the maiden allowance level, at first allowance level, won both of those, competed in the Risen Star, and is now competing back against maidens. So I personally feel that, you know, once you win against a maiden and you're disqualified, you probably should have that condition taken away.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not something that comes up often, but it has come up before. That's probably something that is worth the industry looking at a little bit. I would have to agree.
So from a handicapper and a horseman standpoint, this horse could probably fall down and still beat the field, but from a moral standpoint, I can't back this horse.
Yeah, I get it. As I say, it has come up very occasionally in the past, and it may be worth something that the industry should look at, because I don't know whether anybody would have real pushback on that if they did change the rules a little bit. Because I think a lot of people, and as you're talking about it, I'm kind of on your side too this. So, yeah, interesting. All right.
Yeah, so to be disqualified twice, I personally can't back the horse.
No,
that's just me.
I hear you. Interesting. All right, well, let's go to later in the day. The three-year-olds on the stakes side of the agenda. The Rebel will be the 10th race this afternoon. $1 million up for grabs, a mile and a 16th. We were talking about it on the handicapping show earlier today with my colleague Brian Addo, and I said, man, this is a fun race because a lot of people are going to like Nadal, the Baffert runner. Basin coming back after a layoff since winning the hopeful at Saratoga last year, to me, is very intriguing. Jeremiah has three technique. I like Silver Prospector, and we're going to take a look at the Southwest from February 17th. Silver Prospector is going to be the number two horse in here. And off of that win, I'm tilting in his direction this afternoon. What do you think of the Rebel?
Well, you know what's interesting? I just looked at the leaderboard. Not many in this field have points. Silver Prospector has 21 Kentucky Derby points, and he was victorious in the Grade 3 Southwest. Interestingly enough, there is a little bit of hesitancy about the off track today with Silver Prospector. If you look back on his form, he just completely fell apart. He did split the field to run fourth, two back over the Smarty Jones when it was contested over the mud. With that being said, if you look prior to that, he won over the Slop in the Kentucky Jockey Cup, but he wasn't able to get over it in the Smarty Jones. I am confident that he might be able to rebound today in the Grade 2 Rebel, but you did mention Basin. He has been training down at the fairgrounds, and Steve says he didn't win a Grade 1 by accident. Absolutely not. I love that. He has been training like a bear, and I know from a very good source that Scott Blasey, the main assistant down there, has been extremely happy with the way that this horse is working. They are comparing his works to Curlin and Rachel Alexandra. That is a big statement. So he did come up and have a very nice and easy 4 furlong work just to kind of get familiar with the surface here at Oaklawn on March 9th of 51-4. But they have got high hopes for this horse, Seth. Very interesting to see that Javier Castellano came in. And I asked one of the assistants, you know, Ricardo Santana kind of has his pick of horses to ride in the barn. Why did he not choose Basin over Silver Prospector? Well, Ricardo gets his choice early on, and he needs to stick with that horse. It's not kind of hop, skip, and jump. So he did choose to stick with Silver Prospector early on. That is why he is on Silver and not on Basin. But I do like the fact that Javier Castellano is in the irons this afternoon. But it's interesting that Basin and Nadal have something in common. They are both coming off 7 furlong victories. So it's going to be a very fun race, and I'm very excited to see this on track. But it's interesting is, you know, a lot of people do ship their horses to Oakland to kind of get that crowd noise, that atmosphere. Oh, yeah. They're not going to have it today.
Yeah, that's but the other side of that is they wouldn't have it anywhere else either. So
yeah, exactly. Good point.
Yeah, so they can live with that, I guess. But I mean, I agree. I think it's a fun race. I put Basin right underneath, and I almost put that one on top. I just think that Kentucky Jockey Club's turning out to be a kind of a productive race. Tis the Law was third in there, obviously. He's at the top of many lists. So I tilted towards Silver Prospector. But you make a great point about the money track, two back. And I should have asked you at the top, because we were watching during the handicapping show yesterday. Yesterday we were sloppy. So what's the weather forecast today for the Oaklawn area?
Well, when I looked at the Clocker report this morning, they did go sloppy with the morning works, and we are expecting rain around the 4 to 5 o'clock time period, and the Rebel is set to go off around 5:23, which means probably a little later than that. So I do anticipate a still sloppy surface.
Okay, and I also should have mentioned at the top, you're part of the Fox Sports coverage today, the America's Day at the Races coverage. You're part of that too, correct?
Yes, I am.
Nice.
And you know what's ironic? Initially, there was not going to be a Fox show today because I believe basketball. But with basketball being canceled, we got our show back.
Oh, there you go. That's what I said. I said maybe a little bit of a silver lining we can pull out of this week anyway, benefiting some horse racing fans with extra coverage.
Yeah, we're the only professional sport still going.
Exactly. I was listening to a radio show yesterday, and they were going, there's no professional sport. I was tempted to call in and go, wait a minute, there is actually.
Right?
So we're going to have to kind of push that a little bit to some of the mainstream sports guys. Let's go one race earlier, the Azari Grade 2 event. For the ladies going 8.5 furlongs, I pulled up, from Sam Houston, the Houston Ladies Classic. Well, you have the top four coming back. And so Lady Apple is going to be the number four horse here. She wins Serengeti Empress. Last year's Oaks winner, Kentucky Oaks winner, runs second. Streak Man third. My Lady Curlin runs fourth. And it kind of looks like it's going to go through those four. When I handicap, I just kind of kept them in the same order. But I could see people thinking Serengeti Empress might be a little bit more interesting this afternoon to maybe take them all the way. I tilted towards Lady Apple, though, but your thoughts on the Azari?
You know what I did, too, and I'm calling this Azari, the Houston Lady Classic Part 2. You know, what's interesting to me is Serengeti Empress, she is a very impressive filly, but hasn't been able to win since that upset victory in the Kentucky Oaks. Don't want to take anything away from her, but she was a really good three-year-old. I think Lady Apple has really come into her own. I think she is going to be a phenomenal four-year-old, even though she did win 5 impressive races last year. If you look at her first time last out, her first out facing older, she beat 2 grade 1 winners and did it impressively. Coming into the stretch in that Houston race, it looked like a quarter horse race. They were so amazing. Lady Apple can become a millionaire today. She's only less than $10,000 shy of that milestone. She's very light on her feet. I love the fact that she is 5 for 5 at the distance. She's undefeated in 3 starts here at Oaklawn. I think it's important that she is a horse for course here at Oaklawn. She was last year's fantasy winner, and I think that she is going to continue on that trend today.
Yeah, certainly, as you say, verging on millionaire status, 3 for 3 over the track, ever on top. But I think it's a contentious. You know, we remember Serengeti Empress from up here at Saratoga, the really good duel with Covfefe in the test. And
yes.
So she's talented. She'll make it a lot of fun. A little bit earlier, the older horses in the Essex. And before we talk about the race specifically, Warriors Charge, are they coming back later in the meet with that one, do you know?
Hang on one second. Jen, Warriors Charge, where is Brad pointing him? Is he He is skipping the Essex and coming back in the Oakland.
Okay, that's kind of what I assumed there would be the game plan. Marshall Graham's very nice horse, Warriors Charge, who won the Razorback, and some of the Razorback horses are interesting in here. In fact, I put Bankit on top, and we're going to take a look at the Razorback. It will be Warriors Charge for Brad Cox and 10 Strike Racing getting it done. But just by a head over Bankit, Bankit makes a nice run here to become a nice second. And off of that, I think Bankit is interesting this afternoon. But I've always liked Snapper Sinclair. I think Pioneer Spirit for Robertino Diodoro could be a little bit of a player. He winds up fourth in this race. Snapper Sinclair is third behind Bankit. And as I say, I'm tilting towards Bankit. Your thoughts on the Essex?
Well, it's interesting because Steve has been runner-up 2 years in a row in the Razorback, and he was with Bankit last out. Santana has lost four win photos on stakes with Bankit. I'm going to go to the outside in Pioneer Spirit.
Yeah.
Diodoro sends this one out. David Cohen is on days, but he does have the option to ride designated races. I think Pioneer Spirit's going to be the controlling speed. Diodoro loves the outside with him, and he says he is going to be on the lead or close to it. He is going to benefit from an off track today. I think that is a big key here. He is 4 of 7 wins over an off track, 6 of 7 in the money. He does come off that fourth in the Razorback, a very tough field, just nipped for the show by a nose. He won that fifth season 2 starts back. It was the tougher of those two divisions, and that snapped a very long win streak for Pioneer Spirit. And he was the highest claim in Churchill's history back in November of $150,000. He took him off Brad Cox and Steve Landers, and he's kind of gotten his money back since then, but I do think he is going to add to that bankroll today in the Essex.
That is a bold claim.
Yes, it is.
But it paid off for him, man. Bold, but smart.
Yeah, he was sitting at Turf Paradise and didn't even realize it. And it was a last-minute thing to kind of make some calls, put some money together, and look what panned out.
Yeah, very good. Nancy, as always, we appreciate the visit and the conversation. We will be checking you out in the paddock this afternoon at Oaklawn, but also on Fox Sports as well. So have fun on the national show, and we will talk again.
Thanks so much. Have a good day, guys.
You too. Nancy Holt is from Oaklawn. They have a nice day today, highlighted by that Rebel. Again, one of the tracks that is racing without fans, as many or most are currently, with some tracks suspending operations for a little bit as well. But we'll have a nice afternoon of racing here on the network. A little Tampa, a little Oaklawn, a little Aqueduct, some Gulfstream, and again, the California tracks racing without fans, so that's all coming up. Let me hit you with the promos and remind you once again, Uncle Sam Lanes this afternoon. We'll have a live bankroll that'll go from, you can put your name in the hat from noon until 2. We'll start up at about 1. End of the day, everybody on the team splits up what money we've made. So hopefully I'm going to knock it out of the park, but we'd love to see you swing by and join us and have some fun. Uncle Sam Lanes this afternoon with the OTB Live Bankroll. We'll have cut-ins from Uncle Sam Lanes live here on the network this afternoon as well. Tomorrow, double promotion day here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Trifecta Challenge Match Bet Promotion. That all happens here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, thanks to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. Gulfstream Park. Champions start here. Again, we'd like to thank them for their sponsorship of programming and promotions and events here at Capital OTB. All right, I've gone overboard, but nothing is happening right now because tracks are starting a little bit later with daylight savings kicking off last week. So you're not missing anything. You're just getting a little extra me, whether that's good or bad for people. But it was a nice show today. Hopefully you enjoyed it. With the news earlier this week, I thought we definitely had to touch on the indictment. So Matt Haggerty talked a little bit about that. Sean Smealy with the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. And again, you can go to their website, horseracingintegrity.com, if you'd like more information yourself. But as I say, a lot of prominent folks in the racing industry over the last year, maybe more particularly the last 6 months, and certainly some folks have voiced things this past week pushing that legislation that would give a little bit of federal oversight. You got a little better feel for what that would mean from Sean this morning. So again, talk a little bit about that coronavirus and how that's affecting things with Matt. And again, you can check out Matt's work in the Daily Racing Forum for more information on all of those topics. So the good news topic was, as I said to Matt, I was kind of shocked his story a little bit earlier this week, a couple days ago, looking at the handle from the first 2 months, which was up kind of notably. And as I said to Matt, given the situation out in Southern California, they've got some small field sizes. They've had to cancel a couple of cards. And Fairgrounds, which is a popular track this time of year, has had some weather issues that have knocked the turf races over to the main track and knocked field size down a little bit. Given those two situations, I was kind of surprised with the handle numbers. To me, good news, and we'll see how this all plays out now as the year progresses, and we're now in the midst of this coronavirus situation, which I suppose could go either way. I was surprised Nancy yesterday said, with no fans in the stands at Oaklawn, their handle yesterday compared favorably to the same day last year. So we'll see how it all works out. It's we are in an interesting time, not just in horse racing, but in the entire society globally. So again, we'll keep our ear to the ground and try to keep you updated on any changes, that because things are happening minute by minute. But as I say, some nice racing this afternoon, should be a lot of fun with not just the Rebel as far as a step along the Derby trail, but the Jeff Ruby Stakes stake at Turfway Park as well for the three-year-olds. So that'll be on the agenda as well. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. Be back in about 2 hours or so with, as I say, some cut-ins from our OTB Live Bankroll event out at Uncle Sam Lane. So we will see you then. Enjoy the racing in the meantime. See you a little bit later this afternoon.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.